You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio. At one time, tabletop role-playing games, the most popular of which being Dungeons & Dragons or D&D, were regarded as, at best, a guilty little secret, or at worst, the type of geeky hobby played only by spotty teenagers or people living in their parents' basements. But the simple truth is, the geeks have won. Fantasy, superhero and Star Wars movies are more popular now than they have ever been. Cosplay, comic conventions and podcasts dedicated to role-playing games are enjoyed by men, women, girls and boys of all ages and all social classes. In fact, one of the most popular TV series of the past decade, Stranger Things, not only deals in the realms of fantasy, but the main characters are also dedicated D&D players. To discuss and celebrate all things role-playing and also to explore how accessible the game currently is, I'm joined by author Oliver Kennett and RNIB volunteer recruitment officer Lisa Fulks-Arnold. How are you both doing today?
Great, thank you.
Yeah, good.
It's a pleasure to have you both. As I say, we're going to talk about the celebration that is role-playing. Now, Lisa, you played tabletop role-playing games for some time and have since moved online. But whatever format you take part, take us through the basics of a role-playing game.
Well, the fun of playing a role-playing game is you get to become someone else. You choose a character. You can be an ordinary human. You can be an elf. You can be an orc. You can choose a wide variety, and it really depends on where the particular role-playing game is set. When we're talking about Dungeons & Dragons and many of the online games, it's usually a fantasy setting. In the case of a tabletop game, there's usually someone called a dungeon master who designs the world that you're playing in and tells you what's happening as you go along. With online games, they're all designed ahead of time, and you take on quests and fight monsters and so on, and it's really a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And Oliver, role-playing games are basically our oldest form of entertainment, which is storytelling. But it's in a setting that's entirely interactive and fires the imagination. So take us through how to get started in a localized group setting.
So one of the hardest things is actually finding a DM, a dungeon master, because that's key to playing. They are the person through which the world is accessed, and if it's a good DM, they will help you every step of the way, you know, whether you're sighted or not. There are things like Meetup, the app and website, where you can look for Dungeons & Dragons groups, which are, you know, a way of hooking up with other people in groups. But then moving on from there, you've got to sort of develop your own character. Once you find your DM, you work with your DM to create a character. And you can use websites like D&D Beyond, which is, it's a digital version of the player's handbook, which is the essential part of Dungeons & Dragons, which is the rules, how things work, the mechanics of the gaming system itself. And then you can, yeah, just go off and you create your character. So you can use something like D&D Beyond to create a character which has certain biases, so it can be strong or charming or dexterous or... but it's going to have certain limitations as well, which makes the play more interesting because you've got to have flaws as well.
The creating of a character as well, I remember when I was a gamer and I loved the actual creation of a character. It's something that you do right at the beginning of your quest, but then you obviously carry that character on and you develop them as you go. But I liked the fact that you had control over some elements, but some elements were random based on the roll of a dice.
Exactly, yeah. And yeah, you're right. One of the funnest parts is actually creating a character. I think a lot of people tend to create characters based on people from fiction. So, I mean, there's the obvious one. So you can make someone like Gandalf from Lord of the Rings. But, you know, I've got a character which I developed, which is sort of based on House from House MD. So, you know, Hugh Laurie's thing. So a very sort of cynical, moody but incredibly intelligent and gifted healer. So you can take those sort of things and just translate them in using these statistics and ability scores and skills. You can actually make them into facsimiles of modern day fiction.
And as you mentioned before, Ollie, you have a sight condition yourself. How much sight do you actually have?
Nothing.
So yeah. To have a successful Dungeons & Dragons game, you need, of course, a Dungeon Master, as we've both mentioned, or a DM to guide and to read or create the adventures. You need dice, you need a character sheet, and in some instances, you need a battle mat. Can we make all of these things accessible?
The way I play with my DM is he will have my character sheet in front of him. So he knows all my statistics. I roll the dice. You can get Braille dice. You can get a Braille D20. Then there's one available from 64OZ, which is it's like a board game website for people with visual impairments. So it's all converted board games. But I just use a normal D20 and I roll it, and then everyone else tells me what I've rolled. It just means it moves on a bit quicker than if I was having to feel around for where the dice has dropped and then having to read the number on it. So it kind of works a little bit better like that.
And as long as you trust all your friends.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about any sort of tabletop RPGs. There's no winners or losers. It's playing the game. It's the journey, not the destination, that's important. So it's not beneficial to try and cheat, because all you're doing is you're just ruining the fun for yourself. And that's one of the really nice things about it. You want to get through the quest and, you know, save the maiden from the dragon, or, you know, I was a pirate for one of the campaigns and is basically go around nicking loot. But those are sort of like objectives that the team works towards, and you don't work against one another usually.
It's the journey, not the destination.
Exactly, yeah.
And as you've said, you're happy to rely on your DM or your friends to say aloud your dice roll or your battle map positions if you're using those. But
that's right.
Do you think it would be possible to have a fully blind or in the dark role-playing experience?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, one of the things that we considered is I've got a Braille chess set, a tactile chess set that could be used as a battle map. Dice rolls, you can do it on your phone. There are a few apps. I think there's one called Natural 20, where it's just a rolling app. So you just choose the dice, you roll it, and it gives you the outcome. For a blind DM, it might be a bit harder, because there's a lot of information that you need to have at your fingertips during encounters. So your party is like besieged by a bunch of elves with crossbows or whatever. The DM needs to know all of the block stats, so all the information about the elves that are attacking, and keep on top of that. And then, you know, obviously as they get hit, their health deteriorates. And so keeping on top of that, you can do it with a laptop. I haven't done it myself, but it's certainly feasible.
Now, Lisa, you have moved on from tabletop role playing. What is the appeal of playing online?
I think the appeal of the online games is that you get to meet people from all over the world. We were talking a little bit about the game being the adventure, the journey, rather than trying to win. And you're doing things in many of these games as a group. You're part of a group, all with a single goal of completing this quest, killing this mega monster, whatever it might be. And you get to meet people from everywhere. And as a matter of fact, I met my husband of 11 years playing an online game about 20 years ago. So,
fantastic.
It can have all kinds of benefits.
Absolutely. And of course, Lisa, you work for the RNIB, so you're always aware of accessibility issues. In your experience, how accessible are online role-playing games?
There are a lot of online games that are very accessible. Right back from the start of online gaming, which was back in the 1970s, the first real, or what we call RPG, was a piece of interactive fiction known as Adventure or Colossal Cave. That came out in the mid-70s, and you had to explore a cave and solve puzzles to get through it. It is still available online now, and it was completely text-based. So it would describe to you what you were seeing, and then you had to do simple commands like north, if you wanted to move north, or pick up axe, or whatever it might be. And those moved into what we call multi-user dungeons, or MUDs, which are still very popular today. They're entirely text-based, and there are hundreds of them out there. Most of them accessible with screen readers nowadays, so that you can compete, you know, in the same playing field as the people that are reading it. Another thing that has been starting more and more lately is audio-based. There are some that are designed specifically for people with a visual impairment where everything uses a 3D binaural audio, and you can hear what's going on in different places as if you're in real life and have to react to them based on what you hear. It really levels the playing field quite a lot, I think.
And much like the desktop RPGs that we've been discussing with Ollie, it really does fire the imagination, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, because especially with these text-based games, which I particularly enjoy, because you're using your imagination. They may describe where things are, what you're seeing, but you have to imagine it because you're not seeing it. You're just seeing words or hearing words. So you have to keep all of this in your head and imagine what it's like. The other thing about it is we talked a little bit about creating your character. You can do so much with that it actually can almost become like an alter ego. And it certainly has in my case. I almost always, for the last, I've been playing role-playing games since the 1970s. So that kind of shows you how old I am. But I almost always play an elf. I like being an elf, usually a magic wielder of some kind. And I've, over the last 18 years or so, have almost always, whenever possible, used the same name for my character. And she has, in a way, become my alter ego.
And was this the character then, Lisa, who your husband initially met before he met Lisa?
Yes.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yes, it was. I can answer to that name just as readily as the one I was born with, oddly enough. Speaking again about, you know, how long I've been playing and my age, this is something that can appeal to people of all ages. It's great fun. It takes you out of yourself and it lets you meet people from all over the place.
Absolutely. The big question really, Lisa, leads into that as well. I'm going to ask you both, if there was anyone listening today who would like to experience a role-playing game or an RPG, Ollie, what would you say to them to encourage them to pick up the dice? And Lisa, what would you say to them to encourage them to get online?
I would say it's an incredibly sociable activity. I think you mentioned the sort of the stigmas attached to it about, you know, being in your parents' basement and playing. It's an incredibly social thing. It's the antithesis of that. I think a lot of the time people are disconnected through using phones and stuff like that. We sit around a table, we have a few drinks, we have a lot of laughs. It's really, really good fun. And it's storytelling. I love storytelling and I enjoy my friends. And so doing the two things together is just great. And it's nonsense. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't matter. It's just, it's one of those things in the world that you don't have to do, but you just do it for the sheer fun of it. And I love it.
I think, Lisa, as well, you really break away from the stereotype of a spotty teenage boy sitting in his parents' basement. I mean, you've been playing it since the 70s. You're very successful and you're obviously online. You've met your husband through this. I mean, you're a fantastic advertisement for RPGs.
They are a lot of fun. You know, we're all used to watching things on TV or watching movies. Imagine being able to be part of the story, to getting in the middle of it, to helping to make the story. It's incredibly exciting. And it's also so social, as Ollie said. You're working, you know, with other people for a common goal. There's lots of chit chat. If you play with the same group a lot, you have lots of in jokes. And with online gaming, it's a way to do that with people from all over the world, so that you meet people, you learn about different cultures and things. It's really, really fun. And you can also play with people locally online. It doesn't have to be someone far away, but it's just a great way to try something different. Maybe try another kind of life, 1 hour a week or however often you like to play.
A little bit of escapism. If someone is maybe interested but not quite ready to jump into a game, is there a way for potential players listening to get a better idea of what a role-playing game would be like, such as podcasts?
Absolutely. There's a podcast that I listen to called The Formal Gamer. It's some English guys. They're all old university friends, and they just wind each other up. They're trying to constantly sort of undermine the DM, and it's funny and it's fun and it's light, and it's also a really good way of learning how the game works, because they describe the roles, they say what they've rolled. You know, podcasts are an excellent thing because they have to be verbally descriptive. So they don't really use battle mats because that doesn't work, doesn't transfer to podcasts. So yeah, that's a really good way of sort of getting into it and just getting a feel for it and the feel for how people play the characters, how the mechanics work, and, you know, hear how much fun they have.
There's a few ways. There are some apps on phone and tablet that are available both for Android and iPhone, and there are also some for the Windows tablet if you have one of those, which are fairly simple, and you can just download them and give them a try. There may be one single person. There are, of course, online ones as well, but you can just give one a try. Interactive fiction is very popular, so there are some interactive fiction things you can play. And A Blind Legend is a particular good one that's all sound. Yeah, also, I don't if you have an Amazon Echo known as Alexa, there are some very simple interactive fictions on there, which are all audio. And it basically, she tells you a story and she may ask you a question partway through. Do you want to go on into the woods or do you want to go back to the village? And whichever one you choose, the story goes on from there. So there's lots of simple ways to give it a try and see what you think.
So Ollie, if someone wanted to jump in feet first and take part in a tabletop role-playing group or even start their own, what advice could you give them?
There's quite a lot of preparation that you'd have to do to actually make the game fun and work. A lot of it is off the cuff, but it's good to have a bit of preparation. I mean, there is the idea that people who play D&D are a bit nerdy. And we are, a little bit, but that's because we like working things out before we actually do them, and then it just means it's better to actually roll with it, as it were, and then actually go with the campaign. So the best thing to do would be to read up on it, go onto somewhere like D&D Beyond, which has all the rules, all the sort of explanation of how things work. Make contact with some good friends who are willing to work through things with you and get that sort of get that down. If you can get a DM, a dungeon master who is experienced, all the better, because they know what they're doing. They've been there before. They know the ropes. If you don't know anyone who's a DM, it is possible to do it yourself. But the one thing as a player you've got to remember is the DM is God. What they say goes, and that's how they curate the game itself. Yeah, so I mean, just go online, type in D&D, and you'll be able to get resources that are great. I mean, obviously, a lot of them are based on hard copies books, but now that's moving all online, so it's all digital, so it's accessible.
So we're getting there slowly but surely.
Absolutely, yeah.
And Lisa, if someone wanted to start playing online, which of the accessible game sites would you recommend?
There is a list of games that are friendly to visually impaired called audiogames.net. Those are audio, as it says. There are lots of good MUDs, the multi-user dungeons that I mentioned. And if you just go online and type in multi-user dungeon, it will give you some lists of ones that you can choose from. The other thing I can recommend is if you're older like me, you can ask your kids or your grandkids to help you play some games. It's a great way to start. It's fun to play with them, and they can usually help you get things set up and kind of walk you through it, because I guarantee your kids or grandkids will probably have played games in the past. It's something that is just ubiquitous nowadays, that pretty much anyone under the age of 30 is a gamer.
Absolutely.
And certainly more older than that too.
We get to a stage, don't we, where, you know, the younger generation are way more advanced than us when it comes to things like games. Finally, folks, if any of our listeners wanted to find out more about yourselves or about role-playing games in general, where could they go?
Well, you can find my website, a bit of self-promotion here, which is oliverkennett.com. That's two N's and two T's. And that's got all my books on there, my stories. It's also an access to a book that I wrote called Invisible Shores, South America, about me and two friends who went traveling across South America. It was a guide to people who can see but don't understand how a blind person would actually travel. But it's also maybe a guide for someone who can't see and maybe is a bit worried about going traveling. My mum says it's absolutely brilliant. So.
Ever the adventurer. If anyone would like to follow you guys on Twitter, do you have a Twitter address that they could check you out?
Believe it or not, I don't use Twitter. I have Facebook under my name, Lisa Foulkes Arnold. That's Foulkes dash Arnold, Arnold.
Yeah, and I am on Twitter, again, at Oliver Kennett, and that's two N's, two T's. You know the drill.
We learn now, Ollie. Yeah, Oliver yeah. Kennett and Lisa Foulkes Arnold, thank you so much for joining me today.
Been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio.